It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Like you, I see what I see. The coughing fit was a week ago, so I assume that was pneumonia also. I mean, I would think it would have been, so something's going on. But I just hope she gets well and gets back on the trail, and we'll be seeing her at the debate.
Sandy Rios in the morning with you. That was Donald Trump responding to those reports we talked extensively about yesterday and the video of Mrs. Clinton having this odd affect. I don't think it was a fainting spell. It was like a muscular, like neurological reaction. It was interesting. Before she got on the van, whisk away from the 9/11 event, no one seemed all that upset. I mean, if you normally see someone who is responding that way, who is in her position, you would be panicked. You'd be all around her, taking care of her, but it didn't come down that way. There's a lot of discussion about that. And of course, you know that there's speculation that the Democrats may move in to replace Mrs. Clinton. Mrs. Clinton herself spoke out, you know, after she had spent 90 minutes in her daughter's apartment. She came out looking great, walking. I'm doing great. I feel great. Even though her doctor said she had pneumonia, said she was overcome with heat exhaustion. 90 minutes later, she's walking down the street, hugging a little girl who runs up to her. And this is what Mrs. Clinton said in a phone interview with CNN in regard to her own health. Let's listen.
I felt dizzy, and I did lose my balance for a minute. Once I could sit down, once I could cool off, once I had some water, I immediately started feeling better. And my daughter lives nearby, so I went over to her apartment and, you know, spent time with her and my grandchildren. Well, I just didn't think it was going to be that big a deal. You know, I know Chuck said today he didn't tell anybody. It's just the kind of thing that if it happens to you and you're a busy, active person, you keep moving forward.
You know, it's pretty astounding. I have to say, there have not been many times in my life, maybe none, when I have felt sympathetic or sad for Hillary Clinton. But I have to tell you, I do now. Oh, that doesn't mean I want her to be President of the United States, or that I think I want to give her any advantage in any way to do what I think is quite evil on her part. But I have to say that someone who doesn't seem to have any comprehension of who God is in the world and in their lives, I don't care if she is Methodist, I don't care what she says, the things that she chooses to believe in, the things that she champions, the way she has lived her life, do not comport with Christian teaching or with an understanding. It's the same thing I would say about Donald Trump as well. For people that say, oh, he's a born-again Christian, he's had a change. I don't know about that. If he doesn't understand forgiveness, he doesn't understand who Jesus is. And so I don't think we just cannot make claims that are false claims. So when I think of Mrs. Clinton and I think of her facing what I believe is probably a very serious illness, I feel very sad. Because what does a person do when a person has nothing besides themselves and their power, their money, their accumulation, their ideology that has nothing to do with God? What did they do in those final moments? What do they do when they are, you know, looking at their mortality? I'm not saying she's imminently going to die, but of course she's closer to death than many people. She's not young anymore. So it's sad. It's sad. It's not a fun thing to watch. Of course, as I said, there's a speculation about speculation. Will they replace her? And if the Democrats replace her, who will it be? And very interesting to me, Ken Blackwell, the former, I can't even think of it, Secretary of State for Ohio, good friend, wrote an article on Tim Kaine, her VP candidate, and his radical roots in the Hill. It is really a fascinating read. In fact, we should have Ken on to talk about this. But let me just say, he traces Tim Kaine's involvement in liberation theology in Latin America in the 80s. He traces his connection, Tim Kaine's connection, with a radical priest who was a hardcore Marxist. Then also Ken goes into what the Sandinistas actually did to people and how Kaine was very much a supporter of what they, at least their ultimate ends. I'm not saying Tim Kaine was involved in the violence that they perpetrated, but he certainly supported their movement. And it's an interesting read, and we should put this on our Facebook page. It's called Tim Kaine's Radical Roots from thehill.com, and that way you can read for yourself who the VP candidate is. This often happens, you know, people have a nice affect. They seem so kind. You know, I think of so many politicians. I remember Dick Durbin when he was elected in Illinois. He was Mr. Downstate Illinois, you know, just a man of the people. And Mr. Durbin has turned out to be one of the most wicked politicians on Capitol Hill. That's my viewpoint. Advancing just every kind of immorality he can, and embracing positions that I think are just totally anti-American. But he's a nice guy. Just Mr. Nice Guy. And that's what Tim Kaine seems like to me as well. You may remember that Mrs. Clinton really revealed herself and her heart, I think, Friday night at a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender fundraiser sponsored by Barbara Streisand. And if you didn't hear the remark, you need to hear it, because this is what she said.
We are living in a volatile political environment. You know, to just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
Well, she goes on to say that that's not real America. That's not America anymore. And the point that I made yesterday, and I want to repeat this, is that through the ages, through history, in order to attack, marginalize, and usually eventually exterminate a population or punish or arrest or mistreat or cause them to lose jobs or fine or whatever, a people group, they are always dehumanized. And I'm going to repeat myself. In fact, a listener sent me part of an honors course written by someone whose name isn't on here, The Psychology of War, Changing Minds, and talks about the cognitive dissonance when a person knows that someone else is a human being, but then they're told by propaganda that they are, well, let's see, pigs, they are, monkeys, they are a basket of deplorables, they are no longer human, and that's when you sort of feel justified in the mistreatment, because after all, they are pigs, they are monkeys, they are deplorable, they are a basket of deplorables. This is how it happens. It's a device used by the left. It's actually very dangerous to dehumanize people in this way. And this is what Mrs. Clinton has done. Well, Donald Trump and Mike Pence have been out on the campaign trail yesterday, and both of them had comments about this, and I want you to listen.
I was thus deeply shocked and alarmed this Friday to hear my opponent attack, slander, smear, demean these wonderful, amazing people who are supporting our campaign.
For her to literally stand in front of that fashionable New York group and say half of his supporters are deplorable, are irredeemable, are not American, is deeply offensive.
Yes, it's also deeply dangerous. Now, I just have to tell you, because I'm going to repeat again what I said yesterday. I don't usually like to repeat myself, but I'm going to on this one. Because if Mrs. Clinton is elected president, she will have at her disposal, as we have handily seen in other administrations, and especially in the Obama administration, the use of the IRS to punish, come after deplorables, the basket of deplorables. There's now the FBI. Oh, my goodness, I've got a Trey Gowdy clip that we won't play today, but talking about the things that Director Comey refused to look at, giving immunity to people that were guilty of erasing the email of Mrs. Clinton. We know now that the FBI itself is becoming politicized. And so whoever is the next president, at this time in history, unless they turn things back, we'll have all of these agencies, whether it's the EPA. Remember my friend Catherine, True the Vote, Catherine Ingebrecht, from True the Vote, how four different agencies, I believe it was four, came after her and her husband and their business in Texas because she found, well, she just happened to have founded True the Vote and become very active in local politics. And suddenly, they are the object of all of these investigations. This is what governments out of control, who label whole segments of society as less than human, baskets of deplorables, will you fill in the blank, this is how it starts. And I'm just saying no, 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 not without a fight. Please listen to me. If you're not a basket of deplorable, if you are, you know, if you believe that Islam and radical Islam is something to worry about, that some vetting should take place, that we shouldn't have massive amounts of Muslim immigration, that we should have borders, you are in the basket of deplorables. If you are a believer in Jesus Christ, you believe life is sacred and abortion is ill, is just wrong, immoral, that euthanasia is wrong and immoral, you are the basket of deplorables. If you believe that a nation should be a nation and that there's nothing wrong with having a national family and that you should be careful about who you let in, that you can't give limitless amounts of aid and help and comfort and open your borders to everyone in the world, then you are part of the basket of deplorables. If you feel that marriage should be between one man and one woman for a lifetime, or the bathrooms should be assigned to people according to their birth certificate, you are part of the basket of deplorables. And that's not the end of the list. So please listen to me. There is a lot at stake in this election. And whatever you thought going into this, whatever your strong feelings were, and there are many strong feelings, and I thank God for that, by the way, this is the reality. And so please take heed and take warning and strap on your boots and get out there and vote and get your neighbors to vote, and let's do something before we can do nothing. So that's my comment about that. I want to change the subject just for a second. Because there's some interesting news this morning. The NCAA has pulled the championship game from North Carolina over their bathroom law. Because, you see, North Carolina and their governor are this part of the basket of deplorables. They pulled seven championship events from North Carolina, including the opening weekend men's basketball tournament games for the coming year because of a state law that they say can lead to discrimination against LGBT people. Really? Separating bathrooms is discrimination against LGBT people. Okay, I'm not going to get into the subject matter because I don't have time here, but in a news release Monday, the NCAA says the decision by its Board of Governors came because of the cumulative actions taken by the state concerning civil rights protections. Bud Peterson, Georgia Tech president, you should all be proud. He said this, this decision is consistent with the NCAA's longstanding core values of inclusion, student-athlete well-being, and creating a culture of fairness, except to people that believe bathrooms should be occupied only by people of the gender of the bathrooms that comport with their birth certificate. That's so cruel, isn't it? And so unfair. But so says Bud Peterson. What is the matter with Bud Peterson? I'm asking. Anybody know him? Has he lost his mind? Has the world lost their minds? Has the NCAA lost their minds? The law, again, is called HB2 in North Carolina. It was signed into law last year. Head of the North Carolina GOP, Commie Mueller, said this. This is absurd. It's almost comical. I genuinely look forward to the NCAA merging all men's and women's teams together as singular, unified, unisex teams. Under the NCAA's logic, colleges should make cheerleaders and football players share bathrooms, showers, and hotel rooms. This decision is an assault to female athletes across the nation. If you're unwilling to have women's bathrooms and locker rooms, how do you have a woman's team? I wish the NCAA was this concerned about the women who were raped at Baylor. Perhaps the NCAA should stop with their political peacocking and instead focus their energies on making sure our nation's collegiate athletes are safe both on and off the field. Again, that's Commie Mueller, spokesperson for the North Carolina GOP. God bless the North Carolina GOP. Be back right after this to broaden our discussion to something even more interesting, if you can believe that. Sandy Rios in the morning.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
Hey, this is Bart Millard from Mercy Me, and I have some awesome news. There is a way to break free from drug addiction, no matter how hopeless things might seem.
Hi, I'm Angie. I had been up for 8 days on a methamphetamine binge, and I found myself alone in a 24-hour super center. And I remember crying out to God and asking Him for His help, and by the end of the week, I was in a teen challenge program. And since coming here, I have found a relationship with Jesus, and it's an amazing peace that I have because of it.
For more than 50 years, Teen Challenge has been helping both teens and adults find a life of freedom. If you or a loved one is ready to end an addiction, you can call Teen Challenge toll-free at 1-855-END-ADDICTION or visit them online at teenchallengeusa.com. You're listening to American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. If your church has a Wednesday night supper, you might want to listen up. The Massachusetts Attorney General says churches are places of public accommodation and must comply with transgender bathroom laws. A state commission that enforces anti-discrimination laws says spaghetti suppers would be considered secular events. That would mean churches would have to allow transgender visitors to use the bathrooms of their choosing. The Massachusetts Family Institute has launched a petition drive to repeal the law, calling it a danger to religious liberty. The new law goes into effect in October. Churches in violation could face fines and possible jail time. The state's Anti-Discrimination Commission says, by and large, they do not anticipate churches will be subjected to investigations, but they could. And that's a problem. Visit ToddStarnes.com to sign that petition. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
On a day when a group of congressional lawmakers came to the White House to discuss a variety of issues, President Obama was preparing to use the power of the pen to reject a bill that many of them support. JASTA is the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, passed by the Senate back in May and unanimously by the House just last week. The bill would, among other things, enable families of the victims of 9/11 to sue the Saudi government for what they allege is the kingdom's role in the terror attacks that struck New York, Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon. But the White House has made no secret of the fact that the president intends to veto it when it reaches his desk, despite the fact that he faces an almost certain veto override if he does. That would be his first in office.
Our concern is not limited to the impact it could have on our relationship with one country, but rather it could have an impact on our relationship with every country around the world in a way that has negative consequences for the United States, for our national security, and for our men and women in uniform.
The White House's hardline stance is in stark contrast to the emotional letter written to the president by the victims' families, published in the New York Daily News, asking for justice, their advocates say, JASTA could provide.
This legislation does not allow for litigation in the context of acts of war. It only allows it in the context of acts of terrorism.
New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer agreed, writing in a statement, quote, "There are always diplomatic considerations that get in the way of justice, but if a court proves the Saudis were complicit in 9/11, they should be held accountable."
Brett, the administration says the government itself, diplomats, officials, even service personnel could find themselves legally at risk if JASTA becomes law. But lawmakers are pushing back on that. They say there are specific measures in the bill to keep that from being the case. By the way, they got the votes to push forward either way, veto threat or not.
This is an amazing story. Never, as far as I know, and I probably know this, in the length of time Barack Obama has been president of the United States, has a bill passed in the Senate, unanimously passed in the House, passed to his desk, and he's threatening to veto it, and they even actually still have the number of votes, the enough votes to override his veto. Never has this happened. This is an astounding thing. This bill would allow, again, Americans who were victims of 9/11 to sue Saudi Arabia. I know our next guest has strong feelings about this. This is just part of what we're going to talk about. But Bill Murray, I wanted you to be able to comment on this. Bill is the founder of the Religious Freedom Coalition. We've talked about the Saudis and their complicity in all of this, and I'm very eager to know what you think about this bill. Welcome to the show.
Great to be back on with you.
Well, so Bill, all right, obviously, you're in favor of this bill, are you not?
Oh, absolutely. The prime reason, of course, is the compensation for the families of the victims that the Saudis have financed. But even deeper, these lawsuits will bring out the truth because there will be depositions. And many of the individuals who have been involved in this perhaps own a lot of property in the United States and in the Western world in general. Some of the richest Saudis and members of the Saudi families have financed the radical Wahhabi concepts and ideas that have fed a radical Islamic doctrine all over the world, including the United States, including just right here near Washington, D.C., just outside the city limits. There is the Saudi Academy that is financed entirely by Saudi Arabia. They teach that democracy is an apostate religion. It's anti-Semitic. The textbooks are racist. They're horribly anti-woman. The school has bred at least one individual who is in jail for plotting to assassinate a president of the United States. And we turn a blind eye to all of this because of the wealth of Saudi Arabia and because of how much of America Saudi Arabia owns.
You know, Bill, this all makes sense to you and me. Nothing's astounding here, nothing surprising. But what I don't understand is that the Senate passed this. And what I don't understand is that the House passed it unanimously. That part I don't get, because they never agree with us on this and never side with Americans against the president on these kinds of issues when he always comes down on the side of the Islamists. He does. So what's going on with that?
Well, you know, actually, there has been a lot of things go on in Washington, D.C. that nobody hears about. Let me just give one example. In the last 2 years, the Religious Freedom Coalition, the organization I led, has mailed about 4 million personalized postcards to individuals throughout the United States, primarily social conservatives, for them to mail to their congressmen and both their senators concerning issues of the Sunni-induced terror in the United States, the United States continuing to sponsor Sunni fighters in the Mideast, to arm Sunni fighters on behalf of the Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia's involvement. And we are not the only organization doing this. There is not a congressman or senator's office, when I walk into the front room or one of my staff does, in order to present some of these postcards that weren't mailed directly, and believe me, they recognize them immediately. You know, the organizations are working in order to do this. Many of us, not just my organization, we don't get publicity. The news media, which is either owned by or controlled or fearful of the Saudis, are not going to report on what we do. But we are having impact.
You know, the irony of this particular story, one of the many ironies to me, Josh Earnest said in that clip that we just played something about how this sets a precedent and how, you know, it's terrible that Americans should be able to sue countries and get money from them. It could be starting a terrible trend. But in the irony, Bill, is that we just paid $1.7 billion in cash to Iran, supposedly, because they were due it, because we somehow mistreated these people that, you know, held our hostages for all those many days and killed some of our Marines. Somehow we owe them money, and it's okay to pay them $1.7 billion in cash. Not okay for Americans actually harmed by the incident of 9/11 of 2001 to sue a government that is, at least we're sure, partially responsible for that. Isn't that ironic?
Well, the interesting thing there is that there is a bill that was passed and was signed into law that allows American citizens to sue Iran. And this is a dual thing. What we do is we selectively pick our enemies. You know, here we have Iran. By the way, you are right. Iran, there are links. There was a Sunni-sponsored terror attack in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was president against the Marine barracks in Lebanon during a period of war. Oddly enough, the Shia generally only attack military targets. The Sunni terror organizations virtually always attack civilian targets. And the primary financier of Sunni organizations in the United States and throughout the world that are radical are the Gulf states, not only Saudi Arabia, but Qatar and other nations of that nature. The reality is this: as much as we want to put down Iran and the Shia, virtually every single all of the attacks against civilian targets have been by Sunni organizations. Both of the attacks on the Trade Center, including 9/11, San Bernardino, Fort Hood, Orlando, the diaper bomber, the plot in New York City, the attacks on every one of the military recruiting offices, Paris, Brussels, Nice, the train bombings in Madrid, the attacks on our Air Force base in Germany by Sunnis from Kosovo, the London bus bombings, the airport attacks, you name it, every single one of these are Sunni, not Shia. We have some pretty good rhetoric and some pretty good reason to hate Iran for what they did 30 years ago. I agree with all of that. But we concentrate on that one threat, and we are totally blind to the export of radical Sunni Islam that has caused so much terror, so much death, and so much destruction on Western civilization.
You know, Bill, let me just interject something. I don't want to get sidetracked on this, but on the outside chance that people are listening, and I'm sure there are some, this is the first time they've heard a discussion of Sunni and Shia, let me just say that these are divisions of Islam based on how they feel about the Prophet Muhammad and whose relatives are who. But it's a very real division in the Islamic world. But they agree with hating the infidels. They agree on that. They are both philosophically our enemies, for sure. But they are also at odds with each other. And the Shia are mostly Iranian, and the Sunni are in the Saudi world, as Bill is just describing. So as we get into this next discussion, that may make some things make a little bit more sense. Let me just give a couple of stats, Bill, because before I ask you the next set of questions here, there was an article out of LifeZet just yesterday, and it's talking about how middle America has been hit with staggering immigration. It talks about how by 2014, the adult immigration population had ballooned by 948%. And it talks about several counties where they've had a 683% increase in the immigrant share of the county's adult population. It traces many of these counties, how they are overwhelmed. And then, of course, we get into the whole issue of Muslim immigration. And let me just say, the next stat I wanted to give you, which if I had this, here, hang on a second. 11,491 Syrian refugees admitted into the United States, 0.46 are Christians. And then one last thing before I turn to you. On the Muslim holiday, I don't know how to pronounce it, Eid al-Adha, on Monday, the president spent his time on Monday calling for more refugees in this country from Muslim countries. That's how he celebrated that holiday. Bill, you have written an incredible piece in WorldNet Daily about Christian refugees, and it's titled Why We Don't See More Christian Refugees. And with that, why in the world is the percentage of Christian refugees coming into this country out of so-called Syrians at 0.46%? Why is that?
Yeah, that is overall the 0.46. And I'd also point out that, as you recall, Barack Obama promised that he would made a point that in this fiscal year, which ended on August 31st, he would bring in 10,000 Syrian refugees. And he brought in 10,126, and just 52 of those were Christians. Only 20 were Shia Muslims, and only 14 were Yazidis. Now, here's the amazing issue. The United Nations, the European Union, the United States government, including the State Department, the Congress of the United States, declared Christians and Yazidis victims of genocide in Syria. So the victims of genocide. Now, what group is responsible for the genocide? Sunni Muslim organization. The Islamic State is a Sunni Muslim organization, and they are killing and enslaving Christians, killing and enslaving Yazidis, killing and enslaving Shia. So what do we bring into the United States from Syria? 98% Sunni Muslims. Why is this? It is simply because the United Nations is basic in Sunni-dominated Jordan, is operated by Sunni Muslims. They are the ones that do the interviews. The United States does not take any interest at all in the initial vetting. After the United Nations picks which refugees they want to come to the United States, then the United States further vets those. Well, the United Nations isn't sending any over any Christians or hardly any or any Yazidis. They are interested in assisting their own people, and as a result of that, we are bringing nothing, virtually nothing, but Sunni Muslims into the United States and ignoring the victims of genocide. And for those that don't know, and I won't go on about this, the official Christian population of Syria is 10%. That's official. This does not include about 500,000 Christians, Iraqi Christians, who fled Iraq after 2003, when the war started to go bad, and there was the massive Sunni uprising in Iraq and the insurgency against us and the government that we put in place after 2003. About half a million Iraqi refugees went to Syria, which was the only safe place for them to go because it was a secular nation. And that increased the population probably to 12 or 13%. But Barack Obama and the administration and the United Nations can only find 0.5% of those that are Christians that have fled. Bill, it is ridiculous and something that is radically wrong in our society.
All right, Bill, we're going to take a bit of a break, and I want to ask you to stay with me because there's so much more to talk about, and I want to remind people that you are the founder of the Religious Freedom Coalition, and you can certainly... your exact website, Bill, is it... Tell us what it is.
ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org.
Okay, .org. And when we come back, Bill talks about going to Iraq after the initial war and trying to figure out what was happening with all the refugees after the disruption in the Middle East and what he found and how it's led to all of this and how the Obama administration has been treating those refugees overseas. We want to talk about that as well. So stay with me. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at AFR.net.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there is so much uncertainty about what to do and how to do it when it comes to this incredible responsibility to be a good steward of what God's entrusted us with. Whether it's a lot or a little, it's irrelevant. But it's a very scary prospect today in this day of volatility.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia every weekday morning from 8 until 10 Central and Saturday from 10 to 11 on AFR Talk.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last week, North Korea conducted its fifth underground nuclear test. Despite much international tut-tutting and professed willingness to impose additional punitive sanctions, the regime in Pyongyang may conduct yet another test shortly. That backdrop makes a mockery of President Obama's planned effort to end-run the United States Senate this month by getting the United Nations Security Council to make it more difficult for his successor to reverse the moratorium on American nuclear testing that has been in place since 1992. Think of this as the Obama legacy, an obsolete and unsustainable U.S. nuclear arsenal that will soon lose whatever residual deterrent capability it has, as America's actual or prospective enemies from Russia to China to North Korea to Iran aggressively build up their abilities to attack our country. Obama's unilateral nuclear disarmament poses a mortal threat and must be stopped. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Mr. Speaker, I rise today to introduce legislation declaring the Christians and Yazidis of Syria, Iraq, Pakistan, Iran, Egypt, and Libya as targets of genocide. This bill will make them eligible for expedited refugee and visa processing for entry into the United States and give them priority over other applicants. The Save the Christians from Genocide Act is imperative at this time. The alarm bell is ringing. Ancient, long-standing communities of Christians in the Middle East are being murdered individually and in mass, targeted for extinction. Under President Obama's leadership, our government has stood by impotently and watched this crime against humanity. I call on my colleagues and members of this House to join me in co-sponsoring this bill to save the Christians from genocide. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims are finding safety and economic handouts in Europe, but what about the true targets of genocide? Where is their safe haven? I ask my colleagues to join me to support the Save the Christians from Genocide Act to prioritize our immigration and refugee policy to save these Christians who are facing brutal extinction. I rise now and will ask my colleagues to join me in co-sponsoring this bill, but I at this moment will submit it to Congress for consideration.
That was Congressman Dana Rohrabacher in November 2015 introducing H.R. 4017 to the floor of the House, and it's a bill that would remedy the problem we're talking about with Bill Murray, our guest, who's the founder of the Religious Freedom Coalition. And Bill, before you say something, I know this is old news to you, but this is a whole generation of people. I just find, when I stop to think that your mother was one of the leaders of removing any trace or evidence of God from our culture, many of us mark it to the time in 1960 when prayer was taken out of schools and that charge was led by your atheist mother in the home that you grew up in. When we see what God has done in your life and what God has called you to do, it is a miracle that just has to be marked yet one more time in your life, so forgive me. Bill, in terms of this H.R. 4017, where are you with it in terms of, has it been reintroduced into this new Congress, and what's the status of it?
Well, actually, it was introduced into the current Congress by Congressman Dana Rohrabacher. We do support it, of course. Many other organizations support it. There is a second brand new bill, which I can't recall the bill number now, that Chris Smith has entered that would also assist in this in this program. This is the sad thing. This is something that the administration of Barack Obama should already be doing. The State Department has already declared the Christians and the Yazidis as victims of genocide. And so this should be automatic. This shouldn't be something. Now, the Obama administration is saying, oh, well, we can't discriminate by religion, so we can't put Christians or Yazidis first because we can't discriminate by religion. Well, I beg your pardon, Mr. President, but you seem to be discriminating by religion right now when you can't find any Yazidis or Christians to bring into the United States. But you can manage to find 99% of the Muslim refugees you bring in being Sunni. Oh, and let us not forget that you were raised in a Sunni school, that you were taught the Sunni branch of Islam in your youth, and this is what you are familiar with.
You know, they do use that term. We should make this point. Look, when Donald Trump has said he wants to vet. He wants to call a moratorium on Muslim immigration until we can vet Muslims. And then there's this cry, oh, no, we can't impose a religious test. The point is, Bill, as you have pointed out, the religious test is applied at these camps, which are run by the Sunni Muslims, by the UN Council. So they, in the camps in these various countries, explain what goes on. Christians can't even survive there, hardly, can they?
No. I am in the Middle East often, and when I go to Jordan, the Christians are many times are living in the basements of churches. They're living in the basements of tenements, and we're talking about Jordan now, where the Syrian and Iraqi refugees are. many times in a very poor neighborhood, there will be a four-room apartment. There is one family living in each apartment. Oftentimes, they're living in the basements and partitions with damp. The toilet is on the outside. The shower is on the outside. It gets bitter cold and freezes during the winter in Jordan. When we run our Christmas program there, we have actually had children freeze to death the night before the Christmas program. The conditions are bitter, and the Christians cannot exist inside of the camps. They are Sunni dominated. They're the United Nations staff that oversees them, and all Sunni Muslims. The Christians are persecuted. The women are raped. The female children are stolen away and vanish, often sold to wealthy Saudi Arabians. And by the way, the number of young Christian girls and boys who have been sold to wealthy Saudis from Muslims as well, who have been sold Syrian, the child trafficking going on in the Jordanian authorities, by the way, turned a blind eye to these wealthy Saudis that are leaving the country with these phony adoption papers that show them having adopted an 11 or 12-year-old girl. They know doggone well what's going to happen to that child when she gets back to Saudi Arabia. But that is a whole other point. Then you have the Sunni Muslim dominated United Nations. They are doing the initial vetting, and there are no Christians in the camps to vet. They ignore the ones that are in the urban settings, and this is why we don't see any Christian refugees in the United States. And it is again because the United States isn't interested in doing anything. They allow the United Nations to do it all. The Obama administration does.
You know, Bill, in your article, which we're going to put on our Facebook page, it's why we don't see more Christian refugees. You talk about when you went in 2007 and you took Governor David Beasley, Republican governor from South Carolina, and our mutual friend, investigative journalist Ken Timmerman, and you were trying to investigate what was happening, what was the condition of Christians who had been fleeing Iraq after Saddam Hussein and all the other refugees. And you tell what you saw the Obama administration and its instruments doing in the form of ambassadors. And I'd like for you to tell that story if you could.
Well, you know, David Hale was the acting ambassador in Jordan at the time. And we were stunned. We went into, and this is the entire State Department. It doesn't seem to matter who is president. First of all, the State Department in the Middle East is dominated by individuals that are interested in gay rights. For some odd reason, that particular group of people is attracted to the Middle East. And Ambassador Hale at the time, his main agenda was gay rights in the Middle East. We went in there to talk to him about the conditions of the Christians and to confront him as to why he had hired Jordanian guards that were stationed outside the embassy before anybody could even get up to the window, and they would stop anybody that was approaching the embassy. And if they had an Iraqi, they were told they needed to go to the United Nations, High Commissioner on Refugees, that nobody at the embassy would deal with them or talk to them until they had been vetted by the United Nations. We went in there to confront him because not even people who had relatives in the United States were allowed to come to the embassy. Not even anybody who had worked for the United States military in Iraq and had fled was allowed to come to the American embassy. We went in there and we talked to him. And the conversation was bizarre. We asked him, "Have you talked to the church officials here?" And his staff stepped up and said, "It's not our job to go to church." I mean, as if it was something that, you know, this is disdained, and they had never communicated with the Christian community, had never at any level have talked to them. The embassy staff only dealt with people that the United Nations sent to them. And then before we left, he actually wanted us to stand in front of a rainbow flag to get a picture of us with him to take. This is the kind of situation that we dealt with here. By the way, Ken Timmerman wrote an excellent article. We put on a successful campaign in the United States, and the State Department was forced to begin handing out leaflets to the refugees as they approached the embassy, giving them their various options as what they could do, depending upon whether they had relatives living in the United States or whether they had worked for the United States directly. I don't know how long that lasted. It isn't going on today, I can assure you.
Bill, we have to talk at least about where the candidates stand on this, and I don't know if you know. I know that Mrs. Clinton wants to increase Muslim refugees in the country by 550%. In terms of the vetting, I don't think that she has any interest in increasing the vetting, and certainly she was the head of the State Department when these ambassadors were over there doing what they were, let's say, not doing. So we have a pretty good handle on how she feels, but what do we know about Donald Trump's position on this?
Well, Donald Trump has made it very clear that he wants more vetting and that he wants more thorough vetting. The problem is, where do those individuals come from that get vetted by the United States? And he has not as yet made clear what he is going to do with the State Department. We need to deal with the refugees directly in order to accomplish what he wants done, and that means to remove the United Nations. And I don't think that as yet he has been himself properly informed. I don't think he has had individuals around him that really understand the level that this is happening at, that the United States is not ever getting any the Christians to vet, that they're only getting the Sunni Muslims. So I think he has a good position that we need good vetting, but that has to be extended to go past the United Nations. It has to bypass the United Nations, or the true people that are suffering are not going to get the help that they need.
Bill, we only have about a minute and a half left, and I guess the main question that comes to me is, you know, my heart is just wrenched every time I talk to you, honestly. And I hear these stories, and I think about the mistreatment and our part in this, you know, as Americans, meaning our part. What can we do? What can people listening do to help?
There are numerous organizations that are working with Christians because, to be frank, the United Nations and the major secular organizations, they do their aid according to the local population, which means 95% of the aid that goes from the United States goes to Muslims in those countries, even though the real victims are Christians. There are Catholic relief organizations and other relief organizations that work directly. My organization has a diaper program, which we deliver 160,000 diapers every 3 months. It's at diapersforrefugees.org. We have a Christmas program tries to deliver hope to the Christian children every December. We work with refugees in three countries. But, you know, I mean, forget, don't give money to the Red Cross to help refugees. If you want to help Christian refugees, go to some of the direct relief organizations that work with Christians, or try to do something through the church. Because otherwise, you know, the secular organizations, the Christians are not getting the aid. They are not. Those are the ones that are the worst persecuted, and they are not getting the aid. And they really, really, really need our help.
ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org, ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org, DiapersForRefugees.org is the program that Bill just mentioned. Christmas for Refugees, is that on your website, or is there a separate website?
It's ChristmasForRefugees.org. It is a separate website. We keep those programs separate because the Religious Freedom Coalition, we do a lot of news, a lot of legislation, and so we have the diaper program. The Christmas program has its own websites, its own updates, its own photographs of the kids and the children that get the diapers and the children that get the gifts and what we do.
Well, Bill, it's always wonderful to see what God's doing in your life. Again, the miracle of that is something I'll never get over in my lifetime. God bless you, Bill. And ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org, DiapersForRefugees.org, or ChristmasForRefugees.org.
Christmas for Refugees.
Yeah, and the article that Bill's written is gripping. It's going to be on our Facebook page, Why We Don't See More Christian Refugees. Bill Murray, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, and God bless.
Okay, thanks. All right, well, there you go. A lot of things to think about, a lot of things to pray about. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.